Welcome to New World Notes, hosted by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. Today we'll look at jobs and the economy. We'll feature a movie by that great group of progressive economists, Econ 4. Then we'll look at a sad but funny book by a guy with a really bad job, a State Department munchkin sent to Iraq to help rebuild the country. Or rather, sent to Iraq to make it look like he was doing something to help rebuild the country. Which is worse, a job where your bosses are idiots, you don't have a prayer of success, it's 110 degrees, sex is a distant memory, once in a while people shoot at you, and the nearest bottle of beer is 100 miles away? Or unemployment? That's a close call. Why don't you stay tuned and then decide for yourself? We're taking a brief look at jobs and the economy today, and let's start with the movie. 2 weeks ago, we heard the soundtrack of a nice video on the mortgage meltdown and related crimes of Wall Street. The video is by a group of progressive academic economists who call themselves Econ 4. Some of them hang out just up the road a spell at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. It's a good group, and they're trying hard to counter the flood of economic BS spewed by the corporate-controlled media and the corporate-controlled politicians, including, alas, the incumbent president. To reach out to the general public, Econ 4 is producing a series of videos such as the one we heard. They've named this series The Bottom Line. Of course, no TV station will ever show these videos. You can find them on the internet, but of course you've got to know they're out there and then track them down. New World Notes will broadcast the series, but we'll have to do without the pictures. Today we'll hear another film in the series on jobs, unemployment, and government economic policies, titled The Bottom Line, Jobs. Here the Econ 4 economists argue that the main economic problem the United States has is record high unemployment. The budget deficit is not a big problem. The national debt is not a big problem. Unemployment is. Federal policies could put people back to work, but the government chooses not to do this. Instead of supporting new jobs, government policies are supporting record profits for the 1% and supporting austerity and joblessness for the 99%. Your tax dollars at work. Well, that's Econ 4's claim, and you can decide if they've persuaded you or not. As for myself, I'm persuaded. The film gives us three different groups of voices. One is the good guys, the progressive economists. This is a fairly distinguished group. The voices we'll hear belong to people including economists Gar Alperovitz, Robert Pollan, and Jeffrey Sachs. Then there are the words of the TV newscasts. These are pretty factual. The third group is the bad guys, voices of lying politicians who insist that the country's main problem is the deficit and that the only solution is cutbacks and austerity for the 99%, plus maybe still more tax cuts for the rich. The politicians who are shouting deficit, 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 and proposing more suffering for the non-rich include both Mr. Romney and Mr. Obama. Maybe you can tell them apart from the sound of their voices. You can't tell them apart from their words. Without the pictures, it is a little hard to tell which side is saying what. I will help. Before a politician or right-wing pundit speaks, I will announce, "Bad guy." And when he's done, I'll follow with a pluck. Like that. Everyone else who speaks is either a good guy economist or else a TV reporter. All set? Here is Econ 4 with The Bottom Line, Jobs.
15 million Americans are out of work. Employers cut 125,000 jobs in June.
The most layoffs since March 2010.
Look at the flat line. It just stubbornly has refused to go down 9.8%.
9.2%.
9.7%.
There are now more long-term unemployed Americans than at any time since the Great Depression.
If you want to see how the free market really works, this is the place to come.
There's nothing more inefficient than an economy in which people who want to work don't have the opportunity to do it.
The unemployment rate dropped to 8.1%, but only because so many discouraged job seekers gave up looking.
Most of these people want to work. That's been studied again and again. But the job situation doesn't allow. There aren't jobs.
Never in the last 60 years has the length of joblessness been this long.
It means their energy is wasted, their training is wasted, their skills depreciate. It's just a tremendous waste of human resources.
So the question has to be sharpened. If the economy that we collectively manage, our economy, does not offer them any work, and that's the situation now for 26 million people, and their kids are hungry, who's going to help? Are we going to help or not?
Bad guys.
At a time when millions of our countrymen remain unemployed, the president again proposes tax increases on job creators.
Uncertainty, burdensome regulations, and the fear of higher taxes are making it harder to create jobs and stay afloat.
That, to me, is the biggest red herring that's coming out in campaigning these days. It's just not right that we can expect a lot of gains from cutting taxes to better-off groups.
Bad guy.
Higher taxes kill jobs, lower taxes create jobs and prosperity.
The greatest economic boom in American history took place with tax rates at the 90 to 70% range in the post-war boom. So the evidence is that you can do this and manage an economy better than we've done.
The total level of taxes that are collected by the federal, state, and local governments in the United States, about 30% of national income, is one of the lowest levels of any high-income country.
Bad guy.
The last thing you want to do, if you want the economy growing, is to increase taxes on the job creators. And so what we're trying to help.
At the rates of taxes that we have today, there's no evidence whatsoever that lightening up those tax rates is going to spur economic growth. On the contrary, it's just going to spur higher after-tax incomes for the wealthy.
Bad guy.
Of course, by their very nature, taxes reduce our freedom.
Look, we've had 30 years of increasing inequality, 30 years of rising incomes at the top, 30 years of tax cuts for the richest Americans. Right? We've run the experiment, and the results are in. We have the highest unemployment we've had since the Depression. So the idea that by shoveling yet more and more and more of the economic pie into these already well-fed bellies.
Bad guys.
Corporate tax rate is too high. I want to lower it.
In the hope that somehow they will then decide to invest it in ways that create jobs in our country, as opposed, for example, to shipping it off into secret bank accounts in the Cayman Islands.
Which apparently was done by the blind trustee. I mean, I had no involvement in this.
It's not only lousy economics, it doesn't even make sense when you look at the facts.
But even after the banks have been given more than $500 billion in bailout funds, the Fed said today credit conditions remain extremely tight.
Small businesses are getting turned down at very high rates for their loan applications. Meanwhile, the commercial banks in the U.S. are hoarding $1.6 trillion in cash, about 10% of GDP, money that they get for free from the Federal Reserve because the Federal Reserve's interest rate for banks is zero. Meanwhile, the stock market is at its highest point in 4 years.
There is no shortage of capital facing any of the corporations, the big ones. They're sitting on it. Why they're not spending is because the demand isn't there.
Poor and average people pretty much spend what they've got about as quickly as they get it, whereas wealthy people don't.
High concentrations of income and wealth end up reducing economic demand, end up undermining the whole economy and the job structure.
We've had the most dramatic increase in income inequality in sort of modern history in the past 30 years.
The top 1% has more investment capital than the bottom 50%. 1% has half of American capitalism. The top 400 people, 400 individuals, have more wealth than the bottom 180 million taken together.
We haven't had income concentration like this since when? Since the 1920s. And you know what happened after that? They had the Depression then. There's a link between that concentration of income at the top, concentration of wealth at the top, and the economic crisis we face.
People at the top cannot spend that much money. They buy all the houses, the yachts, the cars, the car elevators, whatever you want, and that it's a fraction of multi-million dollar incomes, which means they save the rest and it's not spent. And which means that the demand level of the overall economy for other things goes down.
A dollar is not a dollar, regardless of to whom it goes. Dollars are worth a lot more to people who have few dollars than they're worth to people who have lots of dollars.
If you give a tax cut to wealthy people, it will mostly be saved rather than spent on more consumption. If you give a tax cut to low-income people, it will almost entirely be spent on goods and services that then a business will hire a person to go ahead and produce.
We need policies where the government steps in to reflate demand. It's a basic insight of economics. Economists have understood this for a long time.
Job creation is very straightforward. We know how to create jobs, and we have actually the tools that we need to create jobs. They're in place. It's called the public sector, and increasing state and local employment could have a big impact. It's budget cutbacks over the past 3 years that have basically prevented the economy from moving towards a lower unemployment rate.
Jobs are created through many sectors and through many levels in our economy. Many jobs are created by the government.
Bad guy.
Government does not create jobs, ever.
And Mitt Romney and the Republicans acknowledge that when they say, well, if you cut military spending, you're going to cut jobs.
It's 11,000 jobs lost in my state of Mississippi. We build a lot of ships. We build a lot of aircraft in Mississippi. It's 1 million jobs nationwide.
But many jobs are created by the government indirectly through their support of research and development.
Bad guy.
To say that Steve Jobs didn't build Apple, that Bill Gates didn't build Microsoft, to say something like that is not just foolishness. It's insulting to every entrepreneur, every innovator in America, and it's wrong.
I say to Romney, if you want to see corporations do a lot and make a lot of money, go out on a desert island and set up your corporation. You'll make no money at all. What you need is a society like our own to make your money. Society, over the last 200 years, has created the mathematics, the chemistry, the physics, the whole infrastructure of ideas and teaching and training that gets you to the point where a Bill Gates can put the last pebble in and come out and make millions and millions of dollars.
The internet was nurtured for 40 years within the Pentagon and then handed over to private enterprise. So it's really the intersection between private enterprise and government. That's what really was the engine of progress in this country. It always has been.
So it's not a business will save us thing. It's a business will save us if there's smart government policy supporting these entrepreneurs who have these creative ideas.
Bad guys.
This theory of flushing out dollars from Washington to grow the economy has failed. We've been there, done that, so let's try and address the problem here. The problem is spending.
Government has to start living within its means, just like families do.
The amount of debt we're adding is simply not moral.
If we stay on the current path, we are heading toward a debt-fueled economic crisis.
The big talk now is that the government needs to spend less and needs to find ways to cut its spending, become leaner and more efficient. But we know that that was not the reason we had the devastating crisis. And we know that that's not the way to get out of the crisis.
Bad guys.
To support job creation in America, we need to keep the cuts coming. Some of the cuts we agree to will be painful. Programs people rely on will be cut back. Needed infrastructure projects will be delayed.
Austerity during times of recession is just a recipe for further recession. There's no question about that. We can look at Europe to see what's going on there. If you start to cut government spending when the economy is weak, you're going to lay off more people, and that's going to lead to further depression of the economy.
Ad guy.
We also want to draw your attention to the unprecedented fiscal recklessness of the Obama administration.
Many Democrats, as well as Republicans, say the problem is our deficits. The problem. The deficits aren't seen as part of the solution. They're seen as the problem.
Bad guy.
The deficit is the symptom. It is spending that is the disease.
The best time to have deficit spending is when you've got big unemployment and low interest rates. And that's exactly what we've got now. We've got unprecedented high rates of unemployment, unprecedented since the Great Depression of the 30s, and we've got interest rates that are approximately zero.
What we ought to be doing is financing direct public expenditures for infrastructure, roads, highways, bridges, rails, mass transit.
Really, we've got to link the question of jobs to the question of needs. So what is it that the country needs? Where should the jobs be created? What kinds of things? We need a clean energy system.
One of the factors that's really going to be driving job growth over the next couple of years, and certainly in the medium term, is a global effort to rewire the world with clean energy.
That's three decades worth of full employment.
We see the Chinese moving rapidly in this area. The Germans have taken over leadership from us. So we need to stay in that game and actually get ahead of that game if we can.
Here we are with the possibilities of making great breakthroughs in technology using smart infrastructure, smart grids, smart transport, smarter energy, higher energy efficiency, lower carbon. But we're not doing this. This is America, but we're not even talking in these terms.
Where are the policies? They don't have them. They don't have them. The only policies they have is tax cuts.
We need different policies that will put the well-being and economic security of working families first. And if the working families of America do well, guess what? In the end, the businesses of America will do well also.
On New World Notes, we just heard the new movie, The Bottom Line, Jobs, produced by Econ 4. Well, on the subject of jobs, having no job is the worst. But second worst is having a bad job. And I just finished reading a very good book about a very bad job. A State Department Foreign Service officer gets sent to Iraq during the U.S. occupation and told to do something photogenic to help with reconstruction. This was a bad job in both senses of the term. It was a bad job, and he did a bad job. And he wrote a sad and very funny book about it afterwards. Let me tell you about it. And let's make it official and have another official installment of The Book Report. Fanfare, please. The book I hold here is by a mid-level State Department career Foreign Service officer named Peter Van Buren. In 2009, he was posted to the provinces of Iraq for a year of reconstruction. He was told to spend money, generate good publicity, and, oh yes, improve the lives of the people in his district. He spent money, failed to make much improvement in anyone's life, came home, and wrote a very good, sad but funny book about his experience. It's called We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the Battle for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People. It's published 2011 by Metropolitan Books. Van Buren and a couple other civilians became an embedded provincial reconstruction team, or EPRT. They were embedded in first one, then another small, sad military base out in the hot, sandy sticks of Iraq. He worked in the towns and villages, but he lived on the base with the enlisted soldiers. and he shared the soldiers' discomforts. The oppressive heat, the hurry up and wait, the lousy food, no privacy, no alcohol, no sex. Even Playboy magazine banned by an act of Congress, I kid you not. Ambushes and roadside bombs outside the base, occasional bullets and mortar rounds flying into the base, people you know getting killed. Not to mention ignorance of the country and its people, and no clear sense of what you're doing there and what you're supposed to accomplish. This was just as true of the State Department as it was of the military. Van Buren draws sharp, subtle, and sympathetic portraits of people, especially of the common soldiers he lives with. He's much less sympathetic to the brass he takes orders from. That includes most of the colonels, all of the generals, plus most of the State Department officials. The State Department officials, his bosses, spend their time attending air-conditioned cocktail parties back in the Green Zone, and piping millions of dollars into wasteful, poorly planned reconstruction projects in the provinces. These projects are designed to generate good PR publicity for America before the projects inevitably crash and burn. The important thing is to spend millions of dollars, advance your career, stamp your ticket, move on, and the hell with the Iraqi people. This book will remind you of the novel Catch-22, except that Catch-22 is fiction and this book isn't. Like Catch-22, We Meant Well is funny. It's absurd, it's preposterous, and yet it rings very, very true. The book gives many examples of what Van Buren went through. Here's one example. Some army major decided that we would bring prosperity to the district by building a large, state-of-the-art chicken processing plant. The army had plenty of money, so millions of dollars were spent building a high-tech, highly automated stainless steel facility to slaughter, clean, and package chickens. Project management got passed on to Van Buren. Now the Iraqis like to eat chicken. Frozen chicken imported from Brazil is available cheap, plus local farmers raise some chickens. For special occasions, you buy a chicken from the farmer and have it slaughtered. This chicken costs more than the frozen Brazilian stuff. Eventually, some U.S. official calculated that chicken from the new poultry plant would cost even more than the local farmer's chicken. But that wasn't the biggest problem. There was no huge poultry farm that could supply the new factory with hundreds of chickens a day, or supply thousands of chicks to the local farmers to raise. Even if big poultry breeders did exist, which they didn't, all the roads were barely passable, full of bomb craters, bombs, robbers, snipers, and checkpoints manned by insurgents. Even if the chickens existed, most would never make it to the plant. Plus, the factory needed electricity. The U.S. Air Force had destroyed much of Iraq's electric grid in 1991 and destroyed most of the rest in 2003. 6 years after the U.S. invaded, and despite billions of dollars spent on supposed reconstruction, Iraqis were lucky if they got electricity 2 or 3 hours a day. Factories need a constant flow of electricity. Did I mention the lack of refrigeration? Not a problem if you buy your chicken from a local farmer, and you kill the chicken a couple hours before you eat it. A problem if you're packaging hundreds of pounds of chicken meat a day. Not that the Iraqis had any reason to buy the expensive stuff in the first place, even if you managed to produce it. But the chicken plant served its purpose. It spent lots of American taxpayers' money. It provided many photos and press releases showing how America is rebuilding Iraq. And it gave a lot of American bureaucrats, both in and out of uniform, another item to add to their resumes. Even though it never did process any chicken. Your tax dollars at work. And that's just one of several examples Van Buren gives. For all its horror stories, We Meant Well is a very witty book. Van Buren writes in a subtle and very readable style. There's a touch of lightness and comic irony throughout. Just a touch, but enough to make a dreary story quite pleasant to read. Van Buren does not think like a government bureaucrat, and he sure doesn't write like one either. This is his first book, and I sure hope he's got some more coming. This is one of a group of books that the publishers named The American Empire Project. This series includes some very important works by some very important writers. This series includes two books by Noam Chomsky. It includes Chalmers Johnson's so-called Blowback Trilogy. It includes books by Andrew Bacevich, Michael Clare, Alfred McCoy, and others. So Peter Van Buren is in pretty good company here. Not bad for your first book. The author is Peter Van Buren. The title is We Meant Well, How I Helped Lose the Battle for the Hearts and Minds of the Iraqi People. It's published 2011 by Metropolitan Books, an imprint of Henry Holt and Company. I found my copy at my town's free public library, an institution I urge everybody to support. Again, the book is We Meant Well. The author is Peter Van Buren, and I thank you for listening to The Book Report. I love that little instrumental theme. That's from one of those hit songs where the lyrics are stupid beyond belief, the melody is totally unmemorable, and the singing is beneath contempt. But there's one instrumental theme that's so good, you want to get the record, keep the theme, then erase everything else. I'd tell you the title and artist, but I don't want to encourage them. No, just kidding. That's from The Final Countdown, by a group called Europe. The song Baker Street is like that too. Do you know that one? Bad melody, worse lyrics, and then the saxophone gets off on a theme that has no connection whatever with the melody, but is so beautiful you want to buy the record. There's some cognitive dissonance for you. As though politicians talking about how much they care about jobs were not cognitive dissonance enough. Well, with that, I bid you a fond adieu. You'll find more stuff by Econ4 at their website, econ4.org. That's econ4.org. And you'll find more stuff by us at our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Thank you for listening. You'll get to my non-carborundum, and please tune in again next week. Ciao.